Good morning.
Good morning.
It's kind of a full crowd this morning. I am going to pick up where I left off about a month ago when I gave a talk. I'm talking about Bodhisattva's four methods of guidance. And there are four: giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and cooperation. I got partway through giving last time, so we'll finish up giving and start kind speech, but I don't think we'll get very far into kind speech because today is a shortened Dharma talk. Hopefully we'll be winding up in about 40 minutes, and then there'll be a break, and then a membership meeting at 11. And the membership meeting is, fortunately or unfortunately, it's only for members. So there'll be no tea after the Dharma talk. It'll be kind of a quick rearranging of the zendo, and then the membership meeting will start. So this is an essay. The Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance is an essay written by Ahe Dogen in the 13th century. And Ahe Dogen wrote this. He's the founder of this school, and he had, over the course of his teaching career, had three or four monasteries. And he trained monks. But he also had a lot of lay students, and this was an essay that he wrote for his lay students. And I'll give you a little bit of background to the essay, and then I'll dive in back into giving. So a bodhisattva is a seeker of bodhi. And bodhi is wisdom, awakening, enlightenment. And a bodhisattva is also dedicated to the awakening of all sentient beings. So the seeker of bodhi and dedicated to the awakening of all sentient beings. And he or she practices the paramitas or perfections. And one thing that I will these four guidelines are pretty mundane: giving, kind speech, beneficial action, cooperation. You know, they're wonderful everyday kinds of things we all ought to engage in. I think we're all in agreement with that. And Dogen offers them in this way, but he also offers them in a much more profound way, a much deeper way. And that's hopefully what I will touch upon. So as he talks about or writes about each of these guidelines, he's coming at it not only from a mundane point of view, but from the point of view of emptiness and the interrelatedness of all beings, of all existence. That's the fundamental, that's the deep, the place where he goes to talk about these. And for giving, he would, in terms of giving, generosity, It's the first of the perfections. There are six perfections, and generosity is the first. Generosity is a value that's held very. It's a very sacred value for Buddhists, and a very important concept. So there is no way not to give. We all are giving this very moment. In our meal chant, we talk about the three wheels of giving, receiver, and gift. In every single moment, we are giver, receiver, and gift. I've often wondered where gratitude is in Zen Buddhism. And it's right there. It's right here. Right in this moment. Right in this moment, we are all giver, receiver, and gift. On a physical level, on a spiritual level, we are all constantly interacting with our past and our future and everything that's unfolding right now. We are receiving and we are giving. Every breath, every particle of light that hits our eyes, we are giving, receiving, and the gift at the same time. I'm going to read a little bit and then just talk about it. This is the first section. It's on giving. And last time I actually started off with this section, but I'm going to start off with it again because it talks about life and death. And 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, whenever I gave my last talk, I had experienced three deaths in the previous 2 weeks. And so this struck me as quite right on. And since we have this little tradition, in a grieving tradition in our practice, where as I do it privately, when someone dies, I put their name and their birth and death dates on my little home altar. And then after I meditate in the morning, I dedicate that sit and usually the Heart Sutra, which I recite, to the deceased. And I've been doing that for 6-7 weeks. On the 49th day, we take the card. What I will do on the 49th day is take the card after I dedicate the sit and the service outside and burn it. Here we will, and so actually two of those people have passed their 49th day, and so I've done that little ceremony at home. And the third one is sitting up here, Karen Van Auken, and she, on Tuesday, I think, Tuesday we will be having here, after our morning sit, we will dedicate. We have a little service on Tuesdays, and we will dedicate the service, the merit of the service, to Karen. And then there's a little what we call an eye closing ceremony. That's pretty quick. The doshi, whoever is the officiant, will take the little card outside and burn it. So my altar is kind of interesting because I've actually experienced over the last 7 weeks this sense of sitting and doing my little recitation after my sit. I've actually experienced in some way these people kind of in there with me in the room. I mean, I'm not anything woo-woo, but just these are friends, colleagues. And it was a way to hold them a little longer, and now the little altar's getting. There's fewer and fewer of those little cards on the altar. Two of them have passed the 49th day, and come Tuesday, I'll be sitting by myself again. So have to adjust. So anyways, let me read this one paragraph. A king gave his beard as medicine to cure his retainer's disease. A child offered sand to Buddha and became King Ashoka in a later birth. They were not greedy for reward, but only shared what they could. To launch a boat or build a bridge is an act of giving. If you study giving closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. Making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. To leave flowers to the wind, to leave birds to the seasons, are also acts of giving. These first two lines, a king gave his beard as medicine to cure his retainer's disease, and a child offered sand to Buddha and became King Ashoka in a later birth, are stories. The king in one of the early dynasties in China, one of his retainers, one of his people, servants, was ill, and the doctor said to this retainer, "The cure is to a burnt beard, burnt facial hair." And when the king found that out, he clipped off his mustache and burned it and gave it to his retainer. And the King Ashoka is a story about the Buddha was Buddha and Ananda were walking down the street, walking down the road, and there were a couple kids playing in the sand, and they were doing their begging rounds, and this one little kid was so impressed with how the Buddha deported himself that he just put a pile of sand in the Buddha's begging bowl. And that act of generosity then led to his birth in a later life as King Ashoka. And King Ashoka was known for his support of Buddhism, and eventually at the end of his life giving everything he had to the Buddhist communities, with the exception of half a mango, but that's another story. To launch a boat or build a bridge is an act of giving. If you study giving closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. Making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. Living is giving. We all do different kinds of work. We all produce things in different ways, whether it's for pay, whether it's as a volunteer, whether it's in your family, in your community. We're all constantly giving. To leave flowers to the wind, to leave birds to the season, are also acts of giving. I love that line. I love that line because it's saying leaving things as they are also an act of giving. And I think, as I said last time, you can think of that as leaving the Arctic National Wildlife alone is an act of giving to future generations. To just let things be as they are, which is our practice, is an act of giving. And I don't know, and so there is this, this is where gratitude comes in for me. Constantly receiving and constantly giving. In this present moment, there is the gift of being alive, being a sentient being. I couldn't give this talk. Were you not sitting here? And you're sitting here changes the talk. So I'm giving a talk, you're receiving a talk, I'm gaining your attention. The whole thing is a big gift. Big gift to the universe. I'll read one other paragraph and then I'll go on to go on to kind speech. King Ashoka was able to offer... Here's the mango. King Ashoka was able to offer enough food for hundreds of monks with half a mango. People who practice giving should understand that King Ashoka thus proved the greatness of giving. Not only should you make an effort to give, but also be mindful of every opportunity to give. You were born into this present life because of the merit of giving in the past. So, the story of King Ashoka, and he gave away everything to the Buddhist community towards the end of his life. He just had half a mango, but the story goes it was enough to maintain his household, that one half mango. Shades of a Christian story. I forget what the Christian story is, but there was a Christian story about that, right? Bread? Yeah. Bread and fish. Yeah. Buddhist story of mangoes, you know. Not only should you make an effort to give, but also be mindful of every opportunity to give. In other words, be mindful of that every moment is a gift. Be mindful of that. Treat it as such. Pay attention wholeheartedly to every moment, every particle of dust that's arising. That attention is our practice. That steady intimacy with the present moment is our practice. And then you are born into this present life because of the merit of giving in the past. Again, and I think I mentioned this last time, we are only here because of the past. And there's an evolutionary piece to this. The present moment is, if you will, receiving the gift of all previous present moments. We are incredibly amazing beings. I mean, we are universes into ourselves. I mean, just at a physical level. We have evolved. I mean, as I said before, where did this hand come from? Many, many millennia ago, probably in Africa. You all get it. We're a phenomenon, and we are receivers and the gift, and we are handing it on. So there's this evolutionary piece to it that spans time, whatever time is. We are being time right now. So, as I mentioned last time too, when Dogen is talking about giving here, he's not talking about putting dollars in the Dana basket when it comes around. He's not talking about writing checks out at the end of the year to your favorite charities. He is talking about that, but he's talking about something much more fundamental and basic about being a sentient being. But that informs putting money in the basket. So, kind speech. Kind speech is... We have in Buddhism what we call the Eightfold Path, and it's right understanding, right intention, right speech, right, and that right is kind of upright or wholesome, or but the right speech that is being talked about in this essay is not that. That kind of this speech, right speech, as Dogen is using it here, is sort of loving speech. He refers to it as speech as you would to speak as you would speak to a baby. as opposed to that right speech or perfect speech of the Eightfold Path, which is not lying, not gossiping, not slandering, being truthful. Well, there's different qualities here, and this is kind speech. This is loving speech that he's talking about. Before I'm going to set this aside for just a second, because I'd like to take another writing from Dogen about speech and use that as something else to talk about. It's a little bit of a diversion, but this is from a collection of short talks by Dogen throughout his career, and so it's called the Dharma Hall Discourse, and there's a koan in it. So what koans are, these little stories that have been passed on for generations, and they're used in Zen to elucidate the Dharma. So there is a little koan here, and it's about four lines. And that's what I'm going to talk about, but before I talk about it, I'm going to talk about the introduction. Because I think it's got a lot to offer. So I will read. I'll read this, and then I'll talk about the introduction. In studying the way, the mind is the way. In studying the way, the mind of the way is primary. So the way is the Buddhist way, the path. This temple in the remote mountains and deep valleys is not easy to reach. He's using a metaphor here, so he's now moved out to a very remote part of Japan and created a temple, a monastery. So he's talking about how difficult it is there. But I maintain that it's getting there, that it's just as hard to practice. We have our own obstacles today that aren't mountains, more like iPads. In studying the way, the mind of the way is primary. This temple in the remote mountains and deep valleys is not easy to reach, and people arrive only after sailing over oceans and climbing mountains. Without treading with the mind of the way, i.e., without, that is, without without walking the path, walking the way, without treading with the mind of the way, it's difficult to arrive at this field. To refine the rice, first the bran must be removed. This is a good place in which to engage the way. And yet I'm sorry that the master, Dogen, does not readily attend to others by disposition. However, by day or night, the voice of the valley stream happens to be conducive for carrying water. Also in the spring and fall, the colors of the mountain manage to be conducive for gathering firewood. I hope that cloud and water monks will keep the way in mind. And here's the koan. I remember a monk once asked Shoshan, "All the Buddhas come from this sutra. What is this sutra?" Shoshan responded, "Speak softly. Speak softly." The monk asked, "How should we receive and maintain it?" Shoshan said, "It can never be defiled." So let me start with the introduction. because I think it speaks to our time. I mean, he's using this image of a remote monastery, but you got to tread there. I mean, it's a great field to study the way, but you have to walk there. You have to get there, and the getting there is the sifting and winnowing of the rice. But there's no way to get there but walk the path. There's no way to get there but to get there. And then he says, and I love this line. "This is a good place to engage the way, and yet I'm sorry that the master Dogen does not readily attend to others by disposition." So here's the chief monk with all of his monks around him and saying, guys, and they probably were all gay, although he had some nuns. So, guys and gals, I apologize in advance. I'm not very good at attending to your needs. That's kind of a lovely little... I mean, I often feel that way. It's not clear what he's saying. You know, he might be saying, you know, this is what you got as a teacher. You're going to have to live with it. Or he might be saying, quite frankly, I can't get you where you need to go. You've got to get you. I mean, I can't give you anything. It's right there already. I mean, that may be what he's saying. And then he says, however, by day or night, the voice of the valley stream happens to be conducive for carrying water. So carrying water, chopping wood, is Zen. Our Zen practice is everyday practice. It's being present and intimate with our minds throughout the day, whatever we're doing. And so what he's saying here is, by day or night, the voice of the valley stream happens to be conducive for carrying water, for practicing Zen. You don't need me, the teacher. Also, in spring and fall, the colors of the mountain manage to be conducive for gathering firewood. It's here. You don't need me. Our practice is supported by what's around us. I hope the cloud and water monks will keep the way in mind. So he's encouraging folks to practice, which is what these things are all about anyways, is encouraging folks to practice. So that was all the introduction, and I have no idea how the introduction relates to the koan, but then he goes into this koan. I remember a monk asked Shoshan, all the Buddhas come from this sutra. What is this sutra? Shoshan responded, speak softly, speak softly. The monk asked, how should we receive and maintain it? Shoshan said, it can never be defiled. So Shoshan is a well-known teacher in the Chan lineage. And this monk is unnamed. And his question is, all the Buddhas come from this sutra. What is this sutra? This is the classic question in almost every koan. What is the Buddha way? What is the Dharma you teach? I mean, it's kind of asking the fundamental question of the teacher. And 90% of the koans start out that way. I just pulled that figure out of the air. A lot of them do. So that's what he's asking. He's asking, what is the fundamental nature of reality? But he's asking it in a very interesting way. He's saying all the Buddhas come from this sutra. Well, sutra is the words of a Buddha. He's got the cart before the horse. How can you have a sutra before you have a Buddha? You can't. It doesn't happen. Unless you go beyond Buddhas. So it's kind of a... an interesting question, I think. And Shoshan responded, speak softly, speak softly. What is the nature of reality? Speak softly. It's an interesting response. And it's a response it's a very interesting response. And I don't know if I understand it. But because I'm talking about kind speech, I thought it fit. So, speak softly, speak softly. He might be saying, speak kindly. Speak gently. I mean, he could be... There's something here about speaking softly. So he might be saying, speak gently, you know, speak kindly. So that relates, I think, to one of the Bodhisattva's guidelines. But I also think he's saying, speak. I think he's saying, claim your reality. Tell your truth. Or he could be saying that. Speak softly, speak softly. Speak kindly, speak gently. Speak. It's all we can do is speak. We're human beings. Or that's, well. And the monk asked, how should we receive and maintain it? Shoshan said, it can never be defiled. And that's an allusion to an earlier story about Wei Nung and the reality that our Buddha natures cannot be defiled. We are Buddha nature. Well, because it's a shortened Dharma talk, all I'm going to do now is read the first two paragraphs, and I'm not going to comment on them. So these are the first two paragraphs of the section on kind speech. No, I'm going to read. It's a very short section, so I'm just going to read the section, and then we'll break. Kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the mind of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. In the secular world, there is the custom of asking after someone's health. In Buddhism, there is the phrase, please treasure yourself, or take good care of yourself. And the respectful address to seniors, may I ask how you are? It is kind speech to speak to sentient beings as you would to a baby. Praise those with virtue, pity those without it. If kind speech is offered little by little, virtue will grow. Thus, even kind speech, which is not ordinarily known or seen, comes into being. You should be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up, world after world, life after life. Kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. Those who hear kind speech from you have a delighted expression and a joyful mind. Those who hear of your kind speech will be deeply touched. They will never forget it. You should know that kind speech arises from kind mind and kind mind from the seed of compassionate mind. You should ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has power to turn the destiny of a nation. So I am going to stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? It was kind of a short little talk, interrupted by technical difficulties.
This character says, I cherish my karma, and I think about that a lot, you know, especially as it relates to sort of the life that we live coming to this practice. You know, I think for a lot of people, pain and hardship can bring us to this practice. I know for me, pain and hardship kind of brought me back to the cushion. And the way that the ability to do this practice transforms that pain and hardship into a real gift for me, just a really powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking, and then you really tied it up really nicely when you were talking at the end about we can never defile our Buddha nature. So even in those times of pain and hardship, you know, I might have been in pain or feeling anguish or feeling sadness and suffering, but my Buddha nature is still there. So
yeah. That's quite cool.
So I told you I was pumped to hear your talk this morning, and you lived up to expectations.
There we go. There we go. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We have a chant here, and we'll do it on Tuesday morning, I think. I acknowledge or I accept or I something all of my ancient twisted karma, which is, all of those. Yeah. So it is embraced. Stephen Batchelor talks about, and I've talked a little bit about this over the last 6 months, talks about the four noble truths. Suffering exists. It's a cause of suffering. The cessation of suffering, and then the eightfold noble path. And he twists that or translates it or interprets it as action. And so the first noble truth is embrace suffering. Be intimate with suffering, which is, in some ways, accepting it and being thankful for it. Our suffering is actually what makes us human beings. We would not be here were we not suffering sentient beings. It's part of being a sentient being, is suffering. Any other comment or question?
Yeah, the other comment. You're speaking softly, I think it was Goebbels who said you're never been successful without the loudspeaker.
they didn't hear it back there. A quote from Goebbels, which is, we never would have been successful without the loudspeaker. Somehow that's a counterpoint to speak softly, speak softly. Any other comment or question? Okay.